Hey there, I'm so pumped to tell you about an amazing new community I've launched called Grief to Growth Circle Community. It's a space for people who are grieving to come together to support each other and for people who want to know who we are, why we're here, and where we're going to have those conversations, all the things we talk about on the podcast. So I invite you to join me at grieftogrowth.com/community to become part of this compassionate crew. The best part is 100% free. And you have access to me in addition to everybody else in the community. In fact, the podcast will be there so you can talk about the things we talk about in the podcast right there in the community. There's also some premium content if you want to go deeper in the work I'm doing, but mostly it's about building relationships and community and about sharing resources and supporting each other. So come on over and check it out. It's grieftogrowth.com/community. I'll see you inside. Close your eyes and imagine. What if the things in life that cause us the greatest pain, the things that bring us grief, are challenges? Challenges designed to help us grow, to ultimately become what we were always meant to be. We feel like we've been buried, but what if, like a seed, we've been planted? And having been planted, we grow to become a mighty tree. Now, open your eyes. Open your eyes to this way of viewing life. Come with me as we explore your true, infinite, eternal nature. This is Grief to Growth, and I am your host, Brian Smith. Hi, everybody. This is Brian back with another episode of Grief to Growth. And today is going to be really interesting. But Grief to Growth, for you who might not be familiar, we explore the intersection of life, death, grief, and the enduring human spirit. Again, my name is Brian Smith, and we talk about things like metaphysics. We're going to talk about metaphysics, peace activism, and some intriguing insights from the afterlife. So joining us today, we have Barbara Wythe. She's an international peace activist, an award-winning author, a psychic channel. She's had profound experiences communicating with Albert Einstein, of all people, from the afterlife. She's also a visionary in the world of metaphysical sciences. Her journey is not just about understanding the unseen. It's about transforming our very approach to conflict and to compassion. So in today's episode, we're going to go through her groundbreaking work, Conflict Revolution, inspired by her channeling of Einstein, and how it offers a novel approach to resolving inner conflicts. We'll explore her published works that blend metaphysical concepts with real-world applications and how her teachings are influencing people across the globe. So how does one channel a legendary figure like Einstein, and what's the extraordinary experience taught her about life beyond death? What are the practical implications of her work in Conflict Revolution for its dealing with grief and loss? And how does her understanding of the unified field theory intersect with the concepts of compassion and human consciousness? Those are a few of the questions we'll explore today. So as someone who's navigated the profound depths of grief and sought understanding beyond the physical realm, I'm really interested to talk to Barbara about this today. So with that, I want to welcome to Grief to Growth, Barbara Wythe.
Hey, Brian, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be chatting with you today.
I'm really interested in having this conversation. I love talking about, of course, the afterlife and how it affects what we do today, what the practical implications of it are. So I like that your work does that. But before we get into that, I have to ask you, how did you find out that you were channeled? How did that begin?
Well, it began actually as music. So when I was very, very young, about 5 years old, I began teaching myself to play piano. I was writing music by the time I was 12. And the process of writing a song to me, and you know, at that age, 12 or 13, was really setting me up for later on in life when I became a channel of Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
And I also had a mentor for many years from high school on. My friend's mother was a psychic and she channeled, but she was just an antenna. You know, there wasn't any afterlife. It was just this kind of picking up this higher power and giving this information, which was so incredibly divine. It was really about learning, teaching me how to love myself, really, for the most part. Mm-hmm. So by the time I started automatic writing, now I'm of grandmother age, so I started automatic writing in 1987. It spontaneously came about, and so I knew what it was. And when I wrote, well, who are you?
Yeah.
And their answer was, we're sound.
Sound.
And Yeah. And I thought, I kind of sat with it for a while. And I thought, well, you know, as a musician who had been going into the non-physical and pulling out music and lyrics and all that, all right, you're working on sound, whatever. And then we move forward. And it was a beautiful statement to me about times that I thought were so shameful and so really not good times. I didn't have a lot of self-esteem, and they reframed them in ways that really made me understand them from a bigger picture. So that's really how I started doing that kind of channeling. Mm-hmm. And then in 1993, I started doing group channeling, where I wanted to see what these voices, I was an antenna, you know, would say. And my two associates who I just met came to the first group, and they said, well, who are you? And I'm thinking to myself, well, they're sound, you know, and I'm an antenna. But they said, you can call us angels. And I was skeptical because I don't know, you know, I just didn't believe everything out of pocket. I had to experientially see what it was. But the three of us talked and decided that we didn't really care who it was, because what they were telling us, what they told us, was these angels had this revolutionary way to resolve conflicts within people that was a pathway to world peace. And that they needed some real human beings who had real conflicts to test out their process.
Oh, wow.
And I just said to Lily the other day, I said, what did we think? This was 1993. World peace was really not a big deal. You know, it was probably one of the most peaceful times we had in modern history in the 90s. And, but we decided that because what they were telling us and advising us to do was working so miraculously for us to, change old patterns, to see things in new ways, to make different decisions. We were learning really how to self-love. And so we were all in. And of course, eventually we had our very first fight, where we were actually sitting at the dining room table, you know, well, you did this and you did, and you did this. And I was like, hold up, let's go get the transcripts. And the note that I read from the transcript was, if you're involved in a conflict, the root of your part of it is within you. And that was profound for me, because I was a victim and a rageaholic, and I like to blame people. I mean, I was in that rut. So that was really the beginning of me saying, well, what does that mean then? What does it mean? What am I supposed to look at inside? And when I get there, what am I supposed to do with it? So that really began the research and development that went into conflict revolution, which was our way of expressing what we learned empirically to the world about this revolutionary thing that was going to lead to world peace. And so I started training conflict revolution in 1999. It was an anger management class. It was a personal empowerment class. It was... I did it both sort of metaphysically and then in companies and such, and had workshops. We published our first book, Diaries of a Psychic Sorority, Talking with the Angels, in 1997. So that was a really powerful time of shaping this process that I have then taken to kind of an extreme in articulating what it is and where it came from. But back then, after our first book came out, there was a tabloid in London, sort of a paranormal tabloid, that was looking for an interview with Princess Diana from beyond the grave. And I don't know, I was skeptical about that too. What is that? But I thought about it and I did it. I channeled both the questions and the answers. And when I was done, I had this really amazing piece of writing that made me cry. And the tabloid flew me to New York and spent 5 hours with me, but they didn't want it. And so my agent and I put together this big list. Well, who else wants to speak? And what we learned was that there was this group of souls in the afterlife who were working for world peace, much like those angels. And they told us, John Kennedy, he's in one of the interviews, he told us, look, you don't have to go looking for people. We have this group here, and we want you to take their statements and publish this book called Party of 12, The Afterlife Interviews. Okay. So that's where I met Einstein.
Okay.
And this is 1998. And when I met Einstein and channeled him, I knew that this was not only the voice of channeling that I had been doing since 1987, but this was sound.
Okay.
And this was probably some kind of influence when I was 5 years old into music and inspiring me, you know, behind the scenes with music. So I felt, and I wasn't particularly an Einstein fan, or who doesn't love him, but I fell right in love and decided I would do a book just for him in 2005. That was 100-year anniversary of his miracle year. So I channeled a bunch of different groups and sat down to edit. And I didn't know what he was going to say, but what he did was he delivered a unified field theory, which was something he never did in real life when he was alive. Mm-hmm. And it involved what he called a map of human consciousness. And basically, on the scientific level, he was saying that you cannot have a unified field theory without drawing into the equation the human perception that consciousness affecting energy influences the manifestations. And he gave us a scientific quantifiable definition of compassion with a capital C. The fifth fundamental force of the universe that uses the four fundamental forces to impel the creation of the universe one step at a time. So that work was monumental for me because, like I say, I wasn't a scientist. All I ever wanted to be was a rock star. So here I am with this information, and I published it. And this is what got me invited all over the world to teach and train conflict resolution. And in that process, I think that what's important, how it really relates to grief, is that when I lost the first dear friend I had that actually died, he was a 54-year-old professor. He was a mentor to me, and he died of cancer early. It was the first, I was crushed with grief. I couldn't even function or stop crying. But what I discovered as I was going through it for the first time was that there was this incredible depth that I was being, you know, thrown into. And certainly, you know, the usual grieving of the loss of your dear loved one. But there was something else that was going on. There was like this opening up to my hearing that was going on in those depths. And that's where I really started to hear the voice of my friend who had just died. And he was saying, you think I helped you in life? Just wait and see what I'm going to do now. So that was the beginning of my empirical experience with afterlife. It wasn't my own like near-death experience, but having talked to, then going on to talk to these people, these famous people, Einstein included. But when he gave me the unified field theory, he proves why there's afterlife. In the unified field theory, you can see, oh, right, that's how it works.
Okay.
And most everything is on this map. But in the terms of grief, conflict revolution teaches us how to deal with all emotions in a completely revolutionary way. So even if it's massive, massive amounts of grief from horrible situations in life, we process it in the same way. And one of the important parts about it is that in conflict revolution, in order to truly feel everything, you don't need to think. You can, and what we do is we think and think and think and think, and we think we're feeling, but we're really not, we're thinking. Mm-hmm. So in conflict revolution, there's what we call the three human dimensions. There's emotion, and that flows up into intuition. that flows up into intellect. And together, according to Einstein and his maps, when you're aligned to compassion, which is really the God energy, the fifth fundamental force of the universe, the creative intelligence that's driving this whole manifestation, we teach people how to do aligning to compassion. And what that means is the emotional wave, part of our wave that's creating us, really is meant, the whole thing is meant to be felt and moved through the body like energy to release it from within us. And when we don't do that, it doesn't go anywhere. It abscesses. And so sometimes, don't get me wrong, we use our intellect to define what's going on, but we teach people how, instead of going right to your thoughts where you're going to start to analyze and you're going to start to think about this and that in the past and the future, to get out of that and use the breath and the witness, this part of us that can see what's going on, to move that energy while we're feeling it through our body without attaching to a thought process. Unless it's a, I used to have a mantra that would say, I don't need to know why I feel this. I just need to feel and breathe. And just sit there and breathe like you're doing a yoga class or meditation. And the idea is we've been taught only to feel such a small part of our feelings before we get into our heads where we're analyzing it. No, I can't feel this. No, I shouldn't feel this. And treat emotion in this sacred way that it's this really the voice of God within us coming to help facilitate the creation of the world. But it's also our passion and it's the voice of intuition within us, always telling us the next most advantageous step for the good of this whole operating system that we're talking about. And that's more of a classical form of compassion with a capital C that we talk about. But in this way, for example, when I was going through divorce, it was a very, very traumatic time. But I said to myself, I am going to cry for as long as I need to, because I don't want any of this to be abscessed within me so that I take it on to the next relationship or that I use it in life as, you know, that prevents me from my full potential. So I literally probably cried for about a year and a half every day, but I never spent one intellectual moment saying to myself, what's wrong with you? You should be over this, or you can't do that because, you know, what are people going to think? My book, Imagining Einstein, came out and it won this major book award at the New York Book Expo that year. And so I walked around the whole book expo. Now my promoters had just gone out of business too, which is another grieving story, just weeping. And I just thought, to heck with it. I don't really care what you people think because this is what I need to do right now. And I even surprised myself at that level of commitment to just not holding any of this emotion in. Not everybody has that privilege, I guess. If you, you know, work in a place close with people, it's harder to do something like that. But the point being is that when we facilitate this different relationship to emotion, and we know that we're sort of emptying out the basement, as we call it, of the abscess, and it comes in waves, it always, you know, emotion always comes in waves. And when it gets to the most intense time, we just can't think we're going to deal with it anymore. And then it subsides, you know, the frequency of whatever emotion. So that's the work that I'm doing. And right now, because of what's happening in the world, where unlike 1993, when world peace was just kind of a nice fluffy idea, everybody needs to talk about it. Everybody wants to talk about it. People are, they're not just grieving, but they're anxious and they're depressed and they don't know what to do and they feel helpless and hopeless because it looks like the world is out of control. And indeed, there is that going on. But ultimately, spiritually, this is our time to go even deeper inside, to get control of what we do have control of, which in this course of teaching are these three human dimensions and our witness and the choices that we make every day.
Yeah. I would interrupt you for just a second because mm-hmm. you said a lot there that I want to unpack some of it. One thing I heard you say that you use the term unified field theory. And for people that are non-scientists, that kind of person, explain to us what a unified field theory is.
When Einstein was alive, there was there still is a huge question because science couldn't come up with the same theories for the microcosm of atoms as they did for the macrocosm of planets. Mm-hmm. They seem to operate in different ways. And so the search began for this unified field theory that was going to explain how absolutely everything works. And Einstein, when he was alive, poo-pooed the quantum mechanics, which I think in afterlife he's expressed his great regret that he didn't really take it more seriously. But even today, I think some of the people who are coming up with these theories, Nassim Harriman is one scientist who's really working on a unified field theory. John Hagelin is another one. Brian Greene is a string theorist, and he comes as close to the Einstein information as I've seen. But nobody comes within really a country mile of what this information that I've been given is. And so now I feel in 2024, this is the time for me to go back on my world peace tour, to go back to teaching and training conflict revolution, and to actually try to get this information to some of the scientists and to some of the people. Like, it revolutionizes the way I think we look at psychology and how we deal with the healing of our psyche. Yeah. It revolutionizes science. It really has proven to be just exactly what he said he was delivering to me in 2005, which is sometimes very shocking to me because
the unified field theory, to kind of put it in maybe some term, layman's terms for people that might still not quite understand. We've got this everything operating on a very small scale, what we call the quantum scale. And then we've got things operating on a larger scale, and they seem to operate by two different sets of rules. And that, you know, scientists don't like that. So we've got to figure out there's got to be one set of rules. So that's my understanding of what physicists would call unified field theory. Are you familiar with the work of Tom Campbell?
I'm not.
He wrote a series of books called My Big Toe, Theory of Everything. But he also studied under Robert Monroe. So he's a physicist, but he brings consciousness into it. And when I hear you use the word compassion with a capital C, I hear consciousness. And I think that's the missing element that scientists don't understand. They're trying to just understand the physical, and they don't understand that consciousness or compassion has an impact on everything. It is everything. That's kind of the base of everything. So that's kind of what I hear you saying. What Einstein has now realized is that we're missing this, I guess it would be fifth force, right?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey there, something I want to tell you about today. My podcast platform, Buzzsprout, has recently made it easier for me to allow you to support me financially. Go to www.grieftogrowth.com/subscribe. That's grief2growth.com/subscribe. And once you're there, you can sign up to support me financially. Now, you can do it for as little as $3 a month or, of course, as much as you'd like. If you do that, you'll get access to bonus episodes, and you'll see those in the regular feed. They'll have a lock on them. But when you become a subscriber, you'll actually get access to your own private feed, and you'll be able to listen to the regular podcast along with the bonus podcast for the subscribers. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for sharing the podcast. And I want to thank those of you who support me financially. Have a great day, and on to the episode.
Yes, and the reason that it's quantifiable, he explains, is that like the route, right, compass, the one compass that you use to draw circles on a piece of paper, so like that compass, compassion with a capital C impels energy to step out of the nothing and into the everything.
Exactly.
And create a circular membrane domain that he calls a compilation of consciousness. And what it does is it's, even though we're all one, it separates out my experience from your experience with this domain as it surrounds the math of everything that's going to be in my physical world. And all this is taking place, he says, in the center of the planet. That's where the source is. That's where the void is, because it's the conditions of a black hole down there, because everything's spinning so fast. It's so hot from the external. Now look up, Brian Greene has just done a big piece about exactly that. Perception could very well originate from inside a black hole. And black holes aren't always those big monsters, you know, chewing up universes. They can be these smaller things. So like a compass, the fifth fundamental force impels the other four fundamental forces to create this. And then like a compass that goes to true north, compassion aligns all of these compilations to true north. So we're all on the same map. So we all have the same legend and latitude and longitude and everything like that. And then the third thing it does is it imbues with all of the parts the knowledge that we're actually just one. So it's like we're fractals, right? We're just pieces of the whole. And we have that innate understanding. And that is the creative force from which we're born. So we are of compassion. Compassion is the God force, I guess you'd say, within the equation in his scientific definition of it.
So Einstein, I mean, there's argument about whether Einstein believed in God or not when he was in the physical, because I think you could take it either way by some of the things he said. How do you feel about that?
I personally think that he definitely believed in something like compassion as the fifth fundamental force.
Right.
But I think he was completely against religion and also then how his particular religion, you know, was genocided. And so I think he's kind of shied away from all that sort of, you know, God as through a church or whatever. But this, I'm absolutely have no doubt that he knew there was a mystery bigger than anybody could understand.
And I think that's a big misunderstanding about Einstein and a lot of those guys around his time, that people think that they were atheists and they were far from they didn't believe in the God of religion, they didn't believe in a guy sitting on a throne who was judging people, but they did believe in some higher force. And I think, you know, Einstein, because I think one of the quotes, I'm not sure if he said it or not, because a lot of things that go around that may or may not be true, but he said God doesn't play dice with the universe or something to that effect. So that's why he didn't like the idea of quantum physics or spooky action at a distance and stuff like that. But he did.
I think he also said, I'm sorry. Yeah. I think he also said that I can't believe if I'm not looking at the moon, it's not there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what he said, what from afterlife to us was that, oh yeah, I get it. It needs me to look at it in order for it to organize into the physical thing that it is. And when I'm not looking at it, it's just potential.
Right. Right. So and that seems to be what some people are starting to understand. It's an idea, it's called idealism, which I've come across recently, is like the consciousness creates everything. And there's nothing without an observer, which is, you know, like that's kind of flipping what some people thought, the materialists, it flips what they think on its head. They're like, there's the material first and then consciousness came out of that somehow magically.
Right. And in our model, when things start in the center of the planet and you have this compilation of consciousness, compassion actually begins to, it doesn't split your compilation, but all that math starts to organize in there so that the part that's me, my inner world and my physical world pull together, the part that's the external world, the chair, pull together, and the part that can observe both of them becomes apparent. And then this becomes a gravitational wave that flows to the surface of the planet to create the physical body that becomes the projector and the perceiver of all of this mathematics of this miraculous universe. And there is the miracle. I mean, we are all just having this miraculous experience sitting in a chair, no matter how good or bad or your day is, it's still a miracle that we can even have this physical experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think people might be surprised, you know, when we talk about conflict resolution, we talk about, you know, compassion and stuff. Einstein, probably the most left-brained person we can think of, would be the one delivering this message. So what compelled him after he found himself in the afterlife to say, this is really important?
When Einstein was alive, and it was the 30s, I think it was 32 or 33, the League of Nations engaged world leaders and thought leaders to have public conversations as a way to bring together the world after World War I, which was this war to end all wars. Right. And so Einstein chose to have a series of letters with Sigmund Freud. And he asked Sigmund the question, how do we stop war? And they quickly decided that one world government wasn't the answer. And they couldn't come up with any answers. But Sigmund said, there's some things we can do. One is we can really nurture open, curious minds who are hungry for the truth so we don't get subsumed in propaganda. Mm-hmm. Then we build communities that we have connections with in our hearts. And then we have to completely understand exactly what war is, because it's a horrible, needless action that doesn't get us anywhere. And so when he saw the bomb dropped on Hiroshima, and he was getting into the end of his life, the great depths of regret. Mm-hmm. Not that I think he wouldn't have come forward with E equals MC squared, but that it had led to that, and that he couldn't figure out. He was a big peace activist. He traveled the world for peace. And also, I think by the end of his life, he was figuring out that he was wrong about the quantum. And I think when we die, what we're attached to emotionally, we take with us.
Hey there. You know, life's got its ups and downs. And sometimes it feels like we're navigating through a pretty thick fog of grief. But imagine if we had a bunch of friends walking with us, shining their flashlights, helping us find our way. Well, that's the dream I've been working on, and it's finally here. It's the Grief to Growth Community Circle. It's a place for like-minded individuals where we support each other. It's chock full of resources and exclusive content. And guess what? It's free to join. The main part doesn't cost a dime. Just head over to grieftogrowth.com/community, hit the apply button, and bam, you're on your way. I love what Ram Dass says. We're all just walking each other home. I can't wait for you to join, start sharing stories, and growing together. Let's light up this path one step at a time. I'll see you on the inside.
So if we love people so much and we take them with, and I think that's why we reincarnate, you know, organizing again with people. But mm-hmm. I think when he died, he had this incredible burning need to, I wouldn't say make amends, because he totally turned down working on any of that nuclear bomb stuff.
Right.
But he still felt like, I should be able to do this. And so I think what he did was he combined the two, where he wanted to make peace and find the quantum field, and created this brilliant system, which is really Einsteinian. If there was anything Einsteinian, it would be this system, because it certainly isn't my plan. I didn't have any idea about any of this. So I think that's why. And why me? I don't know. I don't know. You know, I volunteered and was chosen. It was my life path. Did Barbara Walters, during her career, ask herself, why do I get to interview all these famous dead people and nobody else does? Maybe she did, but by this time in my life, after 30 years, I've just accepted that it is, and yeah. I'm so honored. And now it's the, you know, I if I'm lucky, I live as long as my parents. I got another 30 years going, but this is, the world needs this right now.
Yeah, I think the world definitely needs this right now. And, you know, I look at science and how, you know, one time before, a couple hundred years ago, scientists did believe in consciousness. They believed in the existence of the soul. They believed in all that stuff. They believed in the orderly universe. They thought an orderly God would create an orderly universe, and you could get to know God by studying his creation. And then we kind of fell away from that a couple hundred years ago and became total materialists. And again, I think a lot of the scientists around Einstein's time were misunderstood because, you know, Max Planck was very famous for saying that consciousness is fundamental and science has moved away from that. So I've been waiting for like, what's going to bring us back to that? So I was, this book I mentioned to you by Tom Campbell, My Big Toe, My Big Theory of Everything. He starts with consciousness because I think if you don't do that, if you don't start with that, you're not going to get anywhere. And I'm what it's going to take for science to kind of open up their eyes and look into that again.
Well, and that's what I'm hoping on this mission that I have, is that being able to go to the actual scientists and show them this information, I think will spark that direction again, because it's so elegant and it's so, when you see it and I present the unified field theory and we go through even how we were conflict revolution, it's just, people are like, oh, it's so, makes so much sense and it's so elegant, but wow, how did you come up with it? It's like, yeah, right? So I'm hoping that that's what will happen and we can shift this. I can help shift the focus into consciousness, because what Einstein says is consciousness, compassion with a capital C, compassion plus energy,
right,
equals consciousness, and consciousness plus math of the compilation equals matter.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So those are just, I get excited by that kind of talk.
Yeah. So you're still in communication with Einstein. I assume you're still channeling him.
Yes, so, I am.
And so from their side, I hate to say they, because they are us. We're all going to be there one day. These are just people that have, they're in a different place than we are. From their side, are they concerned about what's going on Earth? You know, because as you said, we're in all kinds of conflict now. We're in conflict between nations. We're in conflict within nations. We've got, you know, we're almost at civil war at this point in the United States. So what's the feeling on the other side?
Well, in 1955, just to backtrack for a half of a second.
Yeah.
Einstein's last manifesto was read in London after he died on July 9th, 1955, the Russell Einstein Manifesto. And basically what it was a plea to world leaders to find peaceful means to resolve their conflicts, mm-hmm. because World War III will destroy us all. Mm-hmm. So that was 1955 as a psychic. He sounded like a psychic. So today, my feeling is that all the work, at least that I've been doing for 30 years, back when it was just fluffy, trendy world peace, that vision has come from afterlife from him. That vision came from before he died in this life, was that we have to find peaceful ways to resolve our conflicts or the world is going to go extinct. Mm-hmm. And I think what I feel, though, is so much hope. Not just because I see, and you see too, as in through all the adversity, people are waking up, people are becoming more aware. And this is why his work is the unified field, the microcosm of our personal lives, reflecting the macrocosm of the world. Mm-hmm. So if I look at what my life was before I met Einstein and how it changed doing this work, to come to this place where I am not only resolved of conflict, but I am thriving and I'm on my path, and it's my manifestation skills are really accelerating. I think the world's in that part of the cycle where people are waking up. And the thing about conflict revolution, here's the deal with my World Peace Tour, where I'm asking for the participation of the willing to take part in a nonviolent action to end the age of war. Is that gravitational wave, whatever the math is on that wave, will perfectly manifest in the lens as it's programmed. So if there's all kinds of conflict on this part of the wave, it's going to perfectly manifest as conflict in the lens. So the theory is, if you learn the system and you revolve, that's what we call it, revolution, revolve back to this part of the wave that we teach you how to figure out what that is, and bring peace here between these three human dimensions, the natural byproduct is that it will perfectly manifest in the lens. So when I resolve conflict with somebody, either they rise to the occasion or they disappear. Things shift and change as we work on this inner world. Mm-hmm. So they strongly feel that this process they've been bringing forward all these years is indeed the answer, because it doesn't require that you join a club. It doesn't require that you have a political affiliation. All it requires is that you understand that by doing this work inside, whether it's conflict resolution or whatever you do to find this inner peace, where you dissolve this us versus them, mm-hmm. right? You against me, or on a more intimate level, the intellect versus the intuition. Intuition is going to tell us, the voice is God is going to tell us, rest. The next most advantageous step for the whole creation, rest. And the intellect's been given the power with ego to say, no, I'm not going to rest. I've got too much to do. And then you make choices that drive yourself forward without listening to that intuition. Mm-hmm. And he says that's where all the conflicts in the world actually are rooted. But if we do this work, we can find that peace within us that will then have a miraculous way that it manifests in the lens. I can't tell you, because most of the outcomes that happen when I do this are much greater than I ever could have gotten if I went straight at it in the arena of the conflict, you know, trying to figure out who said what and this and that. Mm-hmm. It's a much different approach that has a kind of a much more kind of fundamental resolution to the conflict.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is, because as I was going over your work, and we think of conflict, and we think typically between people or between nations or whatever, but you're saying start with the inner conflict that we all have. And I teach something called positive intelligence, and positive, it's different ways of saying the same thing, but mm-hmm. we have the sage and we have what we call the saboteurs. So we've got our higher self, or the higher part of us, the wiser part of ourself that says, this is the way things are. This is the way, you know, and then we've got all these little voices inside of us. And we all know we've got these voices that tell us, you're not good enough. That person's terrible. This is not good enough. You know, all those things. So by resolving those inner conflicts, then the outer conflicts kind of naturally start to fall away. And then even the interpersonal, which then goes on to the next level, which is our global situation.
Yes. And the theory is, this is the next part of their huge lifelong mission to see if their theory worked, is that I do it, my life changes, how other many people's lives in my circle change. And if people all around the world did this just really kind of selfishly, not like, oh, I got to do this for world peace, but to understand that while you're doing it, you're contributing, and that we cannot have global peace until we start individually with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And just even knowing that, I think, inspires people to want to do that work. It's hard work, you know. It's the hardest work of our life to go into those really uncomfortable places and to listen to our brains sabotage us and tell us how we're not good enough. And you know, it drives people to take their lives, that kind of conflict within. So it's really an exciting time. And I think they're excited. And, you know, they, in afterlife, I think when we all get to afterlife, and there is a part of us now, our physical selves right now, that are in that condition of non-physical afterlife with them. So on that wave, we're riding this wave with all of our non-physical parts, they're riding that wave too. So we are there. And when we lose our body in the lens, I think we remember that, oh my gosh, all this time, this has been a part of me while I had a life too. Mm-hmm. So when we do that and we get into afterlife and we have that much broader view than we can have when we're in the physical world where we're battling it out, all those lessons, then we know that energy is eternal and love is really all there is.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of the secret, right? How do we keep that perspective while we're in the physical? How do we keep that higher perspective and that understanding? And if we can always switch back to that, I don't think we can stay there. At least I can't. But you know, I can always try to switch back to it, remind myself, this is what the truth is. This is what the bigger reality is, that, you know, life is eternal and all these things are just temporary. And I think, you know, the challenges that we have, and I try to view them as challenges, I look at them as opportunities to wake up, because people, it's kind of like we have to try every other way of doing something that doesn't work before we'll turn to the way that does work. And people are starting to look around now and say, okay, what we're doing is not working. It's just, this is not the world most of us want to live in. No matter which side of the conflict you're on, people are like, this is not the world I want to live in.
Yes. And that's why in conflict revolution, I love it, because it's so simple. It's like, if you are really triggered by what that side of the aisle is doing, then let's do a little revolution and come back and let's look at what this side of the aisle is doing. If this is your side of the aisle, if this is your domain, whether it's a political side of the aisle or if it's a interpersonal side of the aisle, us versus them, you're having a conflict. What am I doing that is pulling this frequency to me to reflect to me something that's conflicted within me?
Yeah.
And, you know, because you'll get triggered by somebody and somebody else won't be triggered at all. So it's really specifically about our own interaction with that. And that's the good news, even though it's really hard to do. And people, like, they don't want to go into their shadow side and they don't want to do all that. It's what we have control of. It is our domain to have control of. And so that's kind of, I always felt it was like the good news. Put the power back in my hands.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi there. I'm really excited to tell you about my latest ebook. It's 4 lessons that you can learn from the near-death experience without going through all the trouble of dying to learn them. I've been studying NDEs for several years now. I am completely convinced that not only are they 100% real, but that there's some very universal wisdom that we can get from the near-death experience. And I've distilled that down in this book into 4 short lessons. And I've also given you all the reasons why I believe the NDEs are absolutely real. So go to www.grieftogrowth.com/NDE lessons to pick it up for free. www.grief2growth.com/NDE lessons. I hope you enjoy it. So you're the unified field theory that Einstein gave to you. Have any scientists looked at that, or what's been the reaction from the scientific community?
I haven't had a lot of actual physicists look at it. I've had many interactions with people who know a lot more than science than I do. Mm-hmm. One of them was, I was booked into this, it was called the Metaphysical Meetup in Philadelphia when Imagining Einstein came out. And I went into it and I thought it was going to be like a lot of woo-woo, you know, angel thing. And it wasn't. It was chemists and scientists, like these amateur scientists who got together once a month to just talk about the new updates in science and physics and chemistry. And so I was a little bit mortified because, yeah, whatever. And finally, someone was like, can we hear from Barbara? And I got up and I had to say, look, okay, I talk to dead people. I talk to Einstein. I'm not here to convince you of that. What I want to know is what you think about this theory.
Uh-huh.
And so I presented it and they all just lost their minds. The physicist was like, oh, you're talking about the 0-point gravity field, whatever, marrying with the blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. All I ever wanted to be was a rock star. So, you know, and then the chemist did the same thing and it was really gratifying to see that. So I'm really looking forward to finding those actual physicists who really know what's going on that cutting edge, to see what they have to say about it.
Yeah, there are a few. I know I was just, as we were talking about the Institute of Noetic Sciences, there are scientists that are, they're, you know, looking into consciousness. I work with Dr. Gary Schwartz on project, the Soul Phone Project. So there are people that are true scientific minds that are looking into consciousness now too. So I'm really hopeful that somebody will kind of break through and be able to say, you know, you're it's like they've got these equations, right? They got four of the variables in the equation, but this fifth one they're ignoring, which is the one that ties them all together.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm looking forward to seeing Tom Campbell's work. But most of the actual physicists, the Brian Greens and the Nissim Harriman, they're not making that connection to how do you write in human consciousness
right,
into the unified field theory.
Yeah, well, but the thing about Tom Campbell, I'm not an expert, but he started with consciousness because of his work with Robert Monroe at the Monroe Institute. So he's actually experienced, you know, realms outside of our normal physical experience. So having had that experience, that's just, it's an integral part of what he brings together. Is, like he said, he calls it my big toe, my big theory of everything. And basically saying that, you know, your materialists are never going to get to this because they're missing the fundamental piece. They're missing whatever the foundation that everything sits on. Everything sits on consciousness. And so he had two assumptions. I forgot what they were, but he said, you know, for any theory, you have to have assumptions, right? And he had his big one was like consciousness. We have to start with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that also for me, the importance of all this work right now is that we are being targeted with what I call the weapons of propaganda. And I'm also an investigative journalist. I came in off the road in 2011 to start reporting on what was happening in Wisconsin with the government at the time. And so I've done some deep journalistic dives into a lot of different things. And I did a whole piece in 2019 about propaganda. And then when the past 3 years were starting, I really started to take some deep dives into what was going on with the censorship and the, you know, what was the truth and how are we dealing with this and these global forces of, you know, the WHO and the DOD and whatever. And I found that it's a system designed to propagandize us on both sides. So it's driving the conflict between us and our neighbors. And you've seen it. I've seen it. I've got people who don't talk to their grandkids because their kids won't let them see because they voted for this person or that person. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. So to me, conflict revolution has always been the answer for propaganda because propaganda is just the voices in your head that you're believing.
Right.
And so when we bring aligned to compassion, we're going to align to those kind of super conscious intellectual voices of compassion as opposed to those other things.
So I was looking at your work earlier and I know you channel Einstein and we've all heard of Einstein, you know, very famous, but you also channel the Party of 12, I believe it is.
Yes. And that was the group that back in when I got the email from the metaphysical tabloid in London and my agent and I started seeing if there were any other famous dead people who wanted to talk. That's the group that emerged, and there were 12 of them, and they each have a piece. Nicole Brown Simpson was one, and she had a piece about race relations and domestic abuse. Jackie Kennedy was talking about press and publishing. Freud about psychology. We did Jesus, who was the son of man and the son of God. So he really worked on that angle. And it was all done in a month, all these interviews, but it didn't get really into print form until 2001, because in 1999, John Kennedy Jr. died. And he appeared and said, they've asked me to be the introduction to this book. And so once that got channeled, then I published it in, I think, July of 2001. And then September 11th happened and a lot of things changed. And I thought, you know, I was still sort of hiding behind the angels. So I thought, well, maybe I'll come out of the closet. And it took a while. It's very taxing mentally sometimes to be channeling Einstein. You know, you doubt you like, really, could you really be doing that? But I came out of the closet. And so that's who the Party of 12 is. And now I just call them the party because there's so many dead people who have joined the party since then. And who wouldn't, you know, if you die and go into afterlife, there's a big party and it's headed by Einstein. I'd want to be there, I think. So
what's the importance of our life on Earth? Because I imagine these people, we come through, and then we go to the afterlife. And there does seem to be, and is not just from your work, but a lot of other people work that are channeling people on the other side that are like, they're really concerned about Earth. They want us to do well. So what have they given you any idea? Why are we even here?
I think the answer is to figure this out, to learn to self-love, to learn to become that love, no matter what's thrown at us, no matter what we're doing. And I think life after life, I'm sure I've had some lives as, you know, warring, murdering soldier or, and so it's all about, I think, us learning how to align ourselves to compassion, which is the God force, which is what our true destiny is, I think. And all of these trials and tribulations are teaching us life after life how to do that. And I'm really optimistic myself. I know it's a crazy time. It couldn't be more, you know, on the brink of annihilation, but I just have so much faith in real humans, not the ones that they try to tell you, you know, those people are bad or those people are bad, but really live people that you just don't have a lot of preconception about, except you're all humans. When we all take that attitude, things change communally. They really do. And people start to become those compassionate beings that really is what their birthright is.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because if you say something like the world's a terrible place or things are terrible in the world, almost everybody will agree with you. But I actually push back on that a lot of times. And after October 7th, I think it was, happened in Israel with Hamas, you know, and all that awful stuff, you know, people are saying this is the worst things have ever been. And I'm like, wait a minute, let's back up here. You know, 6 million Jews were killed in World War II conflict, and millions of people died around the world. Hundreds of thousands of German citizens were killed, and British citizens and Japanese citizens. So we have had much bigger conflicts. Actually, worldwide poverty is down. Starvation is down. All those things are trending in the right direction. I think what's really interesting to me is I think our consciousness is being raised, and we're saying, this is not acceptable. Even though it was worse before, we're saying this is not acceptable.
Right. I think that's very true, because you can do the statistics, but when you look at, I think the very circumstances of the whole conflict that's going on in the Middle East is revealing to us in a way that, because we haven't ever been this awake together before.
Right.
And I love what you're saying, that we're all going, wait a minute. I might have sat through, you know, one genocide, but this is not okay. I don't care if it's this or that side or this. We can't be treating each other this way.
Yeah.
And
we're all so connected now. I mean, something happens right now in Moscow, and I'm going to hear about it in 30 seconds. And you think about it, in the history of the world, that's never happened. But, you know, you didn't know what was going on in another country. You didn't know what was going on in another state. But now we're so interconnected. I think, like I said, it all seems to be happening right in our backyard. And we're feeling it more, I think, is what's happening.
You know, I remember back to 2000. Remember when 1999 was turning over and we all thought the planes were going to drop out of the sky? And I wrote this piece about what really happened. And I laugh now because it was 2000, which was technically, you know, lifetimes ago. Mm-hmm. But what happened was, on TV, they started in whatever, in the South Pacific, and they covered the whole world, and they showed everybody dancing and singing.
Right.
And that's what we saw, instead of mass destruction. And it's like, that was the first time I think we had seen such a thing, connected us in that way. And that was really exciting. And I feel that same way now, is that if you take away the propaganda, if people would stop listening to most all of the news from everywhere and start to listen to the intuition and ask themselves, what can I do to be the change, to make this change within me? How can I stop my us versus them mentality? And then set about your day. I'm telling you, there's a lot of work that we can do. And as we do it, we see the miraculous results that we reap. Yeah. I had a client just briefly. She was in Norway, and she was from Barbados. And she was married to a Norwegian guy. And she came with this huge conflict, how her mother-in-law hated her. She just, 25 years, she's hated her. She's wanted to send her back to Barbados and blah, blah, blah. And we did the revolution. We did the whole thing. And she came up to me with these big tears in her eyes. And she said, you knew where this was going. I said, yeah, but it's a formula. It's not because I'm, you know, all powerful. And she said, I'm homesick. And I said, well, why don't you go home? She's like, oh, I've got these children. And I was like, well, how old are they? I'm thinking, you know, 6 months and whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, 14 and 17. So her intellect had created so much to stop her from her intuition, she had to blame her mother-in-law. Mm. And just like that, her whole relationship with her mother-in-law changed because she went back 25 years to realize, maybe this really wasn't her.
Yeah.
So there's really revolutionary ways that we can be a part of this change. It's really exciting, I think.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a lot of things, you know, from very big to very small. Let's get really practical now. So for conflict revolution, if I want to get started, what do I do?
Well, I think, first of all, when you wake up in the morning and you say your amazing prayer of gratitude, thank you for another day of life. Thank you so much. And I fully intend to make this the best day that I can. We cultivate a witness. So we want to start to really pay attention to these three human dimensions throughout the course of a day. Intellect in the head, intuition in the heart, emotion in the solar plexus. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, when you catch yourself making a decision that isn't for the good of your whole, that is the most rudimental way to permanently change. Mm-hmm. Because when you see yourself disrespecting yourself or not treating yourself right, and then you have a plan for how to address that, this is the kind of tiny baby step change that we make. So the idea is, when you're in line at the supermarket or you're driving in your car, you don't have to be thinking, you're experimenting. It's like a thought experiment. What are my thoughts doing? And in conflict revolution, there's two parts. One is, just like you would treat your heart one way and your stomach a different way, emotion needs to be overhauled so that we are fully feeling and breathing the whole range of emotion without letting it attach to thought and then turn into action. Mm. So we're developing more of a body breath work. So we're paying attention, and when we get triggered, if we're in our witness and we're watching this and we're watching ourselves get triggered, we have the capacity now to say, wait a minute, okay, you're triggered. Take some breath, rather than letting it go right to the thought that's going right to the projection. So we start to just baby steps of breaking apart those two things and having more free flowing emotion. And the second part is with intellect, is that if you are obsessed about something that somebody did, you know, oh my God, she's such a control freak. There's your soundbite. I'm going to revolve that around to see, where in my life am I being a control freak that might be inhibiting my thriving or my progress or keeping a conflict in place? Where am I doing that? And then in this way, you're off the projection. So right away, you're bringing peace because you're not projecting onto that person. And then you're getting to know yourself to see, oh, where am I control freak? And then you find it, you see yourself, and intuition will tell you what that next step is to bring yourself into alignment with compassion, whether it's feel and breathe and don't think, or, you know, a lot of times our intellect is the thing that has to be in control. Well, let go, relax, meditate on the bigger operating system. There's just little steps that we can take, and we don't have to be anywhere. We don't have to be meditating, and we don't have to be in a class. We're just observing ourselves as a way of life, really.
Awesome. We're coming close to the end of our time, so let people know. Well, first, I want to give you a chance. If Einstein or anybody else has any messages they'd like to deliver to us today, what would that be?
Well, I think Einstein has been leaving it up to me to give these messages today. I do have constantly, I'm doing free channeling via Zoom on my website, synergyalliance.llc. I've got one usually about once a month. I open it up and offer that. And then I have a YouTube channel, Barb With, as well. And Barbara With einsteinandthepartyreading.com is really where, if you wanted to have a reading with Einstein and the Party, you could go there and sign up for one there. And I think that's it, though. I've pretty much dedicated the rest of my life for this message for Einstein. And so he sort of graciously steps away and lets me be the bearer.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I think it's a very important message. It's fascinating, and it's much needed. So thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you. I'm just glad to get that we're chatting about it and it gets out there step by step, one step at a time.
All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Bye. Hey there, if you liked this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you liked. If you didn't like this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you didn't like. Go to grieftogrowth.com/community and look for Talk About the Podcast. I'll see you there.